Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Raising the Vibration with Sheena Metal, only on LA Talk Radio.
It's Raising the Vibration right here on LA Talk Radio. For more info on the show, raisingthevibrationradio.com, latalkradio.com. Also, the movement that this show is an outreach of is at iamraisingthevibration.com and at raisingthevibration.org. That's our nonprofit hub. I also have a spiritual practice at iamraisingyourvibration.com and soon at sheenametalspiritual.com. And I'm a staff pastor at the Founders MCC Church, and we're at SaturdayNightSpiritual.com. That's my interfaith service. I'm their New Age pastor. And also, we have a blog and vlog site at AVibrationNation.com and a wonderful online community at TheVibrationNation.com. And there's more stuff to come. Every time I turn around, there's more stuff happening. So, send us a text message, 818-437-0886, and do that right now if you want to get on the air. Sometimes we have guests on the show, and sometimes we take calls. And tonight on the show, for the first time, we have a guest, and we're taking calls. So my guest this 2 hours is my wonderful friend, Andrea Perrin, who is, amongst other things, a ufologist and extraterrestrial communicator. That's very much the focus of her latest book. She's also a paranormal survivor and wrote a wonderful trilogy about growing up in the farmhouse that the Conjuring films were based on. Even in that house, she believes that she had contact with extraterrestrial life. And I've always wanted to do this as a topic, and I thought, what a great idea to do it with a topic and have Andrea here. So if you want to get on, and the topic is, do you believe in extraterrestrial life? Do you believe in ETs, off-worlders, aliens? What do you think the story is? 818-437-0886. Text me. You can't call me because obviously I can't be like, oh, hi, I'm on the air, but how are you? Text me, and then I will make sure to get you on the air with Andrea and me. And Andrea's here. Welcome, my friend.
Oh, hello, my darling. It's so good to join
it's
you.
It's good to talk to
I
you,
love,
too.
You know, when you call me and it's kind of like a couple hours away from the show, hey, you want to do some radio tonight? I get all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, even if I'm tired. It's like,
I'm so glad.
Oh, yeah.
I'm
talking
so
to my
glad.
Girlfriend tonight. It's... And, you know, a few 100,000 people are just kind of eavesdropping.
Exactly. Isn't that
it's
fun?
Just,
and our last show
great.
That we did last week was such a hit that I decided I had to bring you back sooner than later. And and then we've talked about this topic a little bit throughout different shows you've done, but we've never done a whole show on this topic. And this last year, I've done a lot of these caller topic shows here for Raising the Vibration, but I've never talked about this. I've talked about, do you believe in spirits? Do you believe in evil? Do you believe in negativity? But never about, do you specifically believe in off-worlders? And it's funny, I have a friend who doesn't believe in Bigfoot. He's like, I don't believe in Bigfoot. And we always tease him like, but Bigfoot believes in you. And I think it's kind of the same way with off-worlders, right? Whether or not you believe, they believe.
Mm-hmm.
So what is your, tell me like a little bit, while I get some callers on and we get this started, I start getting this link out everywhere. What's a little bit of your history, sweetheart, with the off-world community?
Well, I refer to them as my galactic family because I feel a sense of, you know, this talking about a higher vibration.
Yeah.
I feel a connection with them that I don't feel with anybody on earth. It's different. It is what I refer to as higher love. There's a purity about it, a pure of heart, essential quality about it. And you'll notice, you know, like last week when we talked, I was really high energy and really intense and, you know, talking about a lot of different things. At one time we kept coming, you know, full circle in the course of our conversation during our last show.
Mm-hmm.
And yet tonight, you know, just before I came on the air with you, I went outside and and just said, you know, just guide me through it. Because what I need to share is not my message, but it's their message.
Mm.
And so I function predominantly as a conduit for that message. And so if I sound a little bit more mellow tonight or a little bit less intensified as I usually am, it's because of the message that I received in response to that. And the message is they know.
Hmm.
If they're coming to us, if they're listening to this, if they're not, and they all have free will. Everybody that's listening to this can change the station, can tune us out.
Mm.
But if they do, it's to their own detriment. Because if they were attracted to this, then they need to tune in and turn on to the message that I have received. You see, my dear, for me, belief does not factor into it at all.
Mm.
This is not a belief system for me. This is not, it's not. It is knowledge. I know that we are not alone in the universe. I know through a lifetime of experiences and what could literally be deemed close encounters.
Right.
I know that we are not alone, that we are so not alone that it would freak people out to realize how not alone we are.
Yeah.
And that because the message that I receive is that, you know, first do no harm. I think that Hippocrates must have been an extraterrestrial, or at least partially, to have brought that foundational notion into the world and given it words. First, do no harm. And so that's why they won't all make their presence known simultaneously around this globe, because by their own estimation, some 60,000 or more people would drop dead instantly. And they won't do that. They don't want to scare anyone.
Mm.
They want to love us well. That's all. They came vast distances from unknown worlds, known to them but not to us, and have come here with purpose and reason because, as the Honorable Paul T. Hellyer, the former Prime Minister, or the former Defense Minister, pardon me, of Canada, said, they looked upon us and said, oh no, the children are playing with matches.
Mm-hmm.
And that was when the first atomic bombs were being developed. And essentially they came in droves. If they could get here, they got here, because this is an interconnected universe. And so everything that touches one touches all. And when we do damage to our own planet, we are likewise damaging other places in the universe, in what the way that it's been explained to me is that dimensions are layered like phyllo dough, like layer cake. And I might be getting that wrong, you know, because I'm not a quantum physicist. I understand rudimentary elements of quantum mechanics, but that's not my bag. You know, I'm not a scientist. I fall much more into the category of someone who is perhaps referred to as a spiritualist.
Mm-hmm.
But that's only because, I don't think of myself that way at all. I think of myself as a philosopher, as perhaps a metaphysician, somebody integrally connected with metaphysics, mm-hmm. in different forms and different shapes and involving different entities. What I do know is that I see multidimensionally, extra-dimensionally, ultra-dimensionally. I don't just see my own world. I see not only what is out in the stratosphere. Don't ask me to read a menu. You saw me the last time we went out to dinner. I was borrowing my father's glasses. Do you remember? So that I could read the menu.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
You were much
and
more interested
fancy,
in showing
beautiful
me
restaurant that we went to.
Yes, Maggiano's. You were much more interested in showing me pictures of ETs that you took out the window of the plane than you were actually eating or ordering?
Well, yeah, because why? Because you needed to see them.
I think I took half your food home.
Yeah, well, you did, because someone had to eat it. You know, I mean, there's priorities in life,
of course.
And food is like not on the priority list. It's on the next list.
Right, exactly.
So what I needed to show you were some of the things that I had experienced, and were they not phenomenal?
Oh, my God, yes. Sure, of course, yes.
You know, I mean, I included maybe a dozen, maybe a little more photographs in... hold on, excuse me one second. There is an extremely badly behaved cat on the dining room table.
Oh my goodness.
Are you kidding me?
Somebody's in trouble. Trouble.
We just got a brand new dining room set that was, you know, used. I mean, I'm in Georgia with my mom and my sister, Chris. And she, you know, looked and looked and looked till she found the exact right table and chairs, and we went and got it today. It was an all-day-long proposition.
Right.
Believe me, we can't do anything in a couple of hours.
Right.
So, you know, now the table is all set up, all pretty for Christmas. And, you know, and now the cats are like, oh, what's this?
Exactly.
You know,
the cat's
like
got to break it in.
That I've chased off the table today. They never went on the other table.
I know, but this is a new table.
Didn't even dream of it.
Doesn't even smell like them yet.
I know. Oh, God. And yet, could I ever part with one of them? Not even one of these little four-legged furry fuzzballs.
Mine's home with a cold, and I just started medicating her, and I'm like, she's I say she's 80. She's 16, so she's 80 in people years.
So she's 80. Yeah, she's my mother's age.
And she doesn't do well when it gets really cold. And last year she got pneumonia because it got cold. So I've been keeping an eye on her, and she's been holding up. But today I noticed that the one eye was starting to close, and the goopiness and the sniffles, and I'm like, So I quick went and made her up a little, put some medicine and some wet food, but she screamed at me to get the food, so I know that she's feeling good. Because when she's not feeling good, I have to make her eat. So you got to catch it now before it gets bad.
I love the stream of consciousness stuff. We went from one subject to the next.
That's okay.
In a split second, and I blame myself for that.
Why?
You know, but I did notice that Percival was on the table, and
that's
it had to be addressed.
It's perfectly okay. We can address anything you want
to
address.
Back to the subject at hand.
So do you think that the off-worlders are, do you think that they're upset with us? Do you think they're saddened by us? I did an off-world channeling session maybe 3 years ago with some friends, and I had some friends that were like obsessed with ETs. So we did this channeling session, and this giant thing, like, I honestly don't know if this thing that pretty much sat on the roof of my friend's house was off-world or angelic or what in the world this thing was, but it was so big. And it was filled with kind of a mixture of kind of sadness and irritation at how human beings have treated each other and what we've done to the planet and how we choose to go to ego and hate and all these wasted emotions rather than finding ways that we can make the world a better place. Has that been your experience with them too?
Yes, somewhat. Though I find that the Arcturians and the Pleiadians are much more understanding. They have a more complex emotional system than we do. You can break human emotions down to, you know, pretty much a set quotient of emotions in much the same way that you can look at the periodic table and see the elements, you know, and in the way that, you know, we'll discover a new element and we'll add that to the periodic table, which happens periodically. I did that on purpose.
Nice.
You know, with human emotions, they're pretty much state.
Yeah.
And can fall into very specific categories. And what I feel from them is different in much the same way I can express for them a higher love, a sensation that comes from my core, and is riddled with gratitude and curiosity, empathy, feelings of connection. It's a very complicated emotional mindset.
Yeah.
But their reaction to us, it depends on the race. There are a number of different races that are interacting with humanity that are either inhabiting the Earth or are circumnavigating the globe at sometimes close distance, relative close distance, and sometimes at vast distances. And yet are still quite capable of communicating. Most people that do communicate admit that the vast majority of their communication is telepathic. I speak it aloud only because I don't know. I have a need. I sing to them. And when I sing what are their favorite songs, which are probably my favorite songs because they're theirs or they're theirs because they're mine, I know which songs to sing and what will elicit a certain response. And we've just had, you know, in terms of compilation of evidence, I've been taking people out for years in huge groups, sometimes 50 to 500. I mean, like a lot of people come out with me, and it doesn't mean that every single person is going to see something or have an experience that night, but it generally touches them and they're open to it, and within a relative short amount of time after they've had that experience begin to start to see things that they never saw before. So it opens them. It's kind of a third eye opening. It's not ritualistic in any way. It's different every time I do it. I pick up on the energy of the crowd, and then I give them what I think that will be most beneficial to them in terms of a proper introduction. It's a very, it's as simple as it is complicated, and it's a beautiful thing. And I tell folks when they come with me, if you have any fear about this, any fear at all, you don't have to stay. You know, I mean, we'll all see you at the bar later. You don't, you know, it's, don't feel if you're curious, but you're more afraid than curious, come out next time. You know, don't force yourself into, because it is, it's the only fair thing to do, because it is life altering. It is absolutely life altering. You're never the same again. It's just in one of those pivotal moments when you see something. I have had, you know, elderly men weeping in my arms, just weeping, telling me how grateful they are because something they've waited a lifetime to see, they just saw. You know, that's so powerful and incredibly humbling. Incredibly, because all I'm doing is facilitating. I'm just, it's no different, really. It's no different than me introducing you to Randy, you know, my producer, or vice versa. You know, Sheena, this is Randy. Randy, this is Sheena. How do you do? Nice to meet you. My pleasure. Yada, yada.
I loved
it's
him.
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
It is. And it is not a matter of belief. Now, do I think that it expedites things if a person believes, even if they haven't seen it with their own eyes, had their own experience, their own encounter? Yes. I think that belief and faith is what drives the human engine. I think it's what catapults us forward, keeps us, you know, in discovery mode. It's part of what makes us so interesting. Human beings, you know, but is it necessary? Is it the necessary element? Absolutely not. It's not. I think that if you're open, you know, a belief in something makes you more open to it, obviously. So if you're more open to it, then chances are you're going to be able to have that experience in a more fluid way, in a more organic way. But you don't have to, you know, very often it is the sighting itself. It is the encounter itself that creates the belief.
I agree. I completely agree. I think that's true for anything that's out of the three dimensions, right? I mean, and sometimes things that are within the three dimensions, sometimes we don't know what we believe until we experience something that either shows us what we believe or what we don't believe.
Yes.
And moves us then into what we believe because we know what we don't believe. I mean, I think that that's that's kind of just, you know, bumping your way through humanity 101, right? We sort of live by bumping our heads into things.
Yes.
It's just kind of how human beings live. I mean, I understand being not a believer in extraterrestrial life. I mean, I'm not, because I grew up with my mother seeing an off-worlder when I was one. So I grew up with that belief system. But I can't imagine being scared of it. I mean, if you don't believe in it, then why would you be scared? So why don't you run my listeners through a little bit of what you do, sweetie, when you encounter and you communicate to them while other folks are around, communicate with them while other folks are around, and then we'll try to figure out why that would frighten someone.
Well, and you know, that's the thing. I don't understand why anybody would be frightened of them, other than they've been conditioned to be frightened of them. They've bought into what is, you know, decades and perhaps a lifelong fear, knee-jerk response, reaction to the idea, because so much of the media around extraterrestrials has been, you know, they come here to eat us or poison us or blow up our planet.
Right, right. They always want to eat us. I think that's very interesting, because I think we probably taste poor.
Yeah.
Even a shark, if it's us or a seal pup, like, they'll always eat the seal pup. So I think we probably pretty much taste like shit. You know, we put a lot of bad stuff in our bodies and we do a lot of chemicals. Yeah. I don't think we're probably taste terrific, but how nice that we flatter ourselves. Like, aliens just want to come here and eat us. Isn't that sort of like the weird guy that's like, I know all the gay guys in the shower and I'm not going to drop the soap because I know they all want me. It's that same weirdness, right? We you know, I'm 50 with a pot belly, but I know all these 25-year-old gay men, if I drop the soap, I'm really in for it, you know? I think it's the kind of the same thing. Like, why do we think that aliens are like, oh, humans, of all the things in the galaxy, we love to eat humans?
Well, then we wouldn't be here anymore. Doesn't it follow logically
I think, if they
have the technology to be here and to take over our planet and to enslave or even ingest us, that it would have happened by now?
Yeah. I mean, I think that we're sort of like the culinary equivalent of the chicken McNuggets before McDonald's made them put the real chicken in them. When they were just made out of like chicken paste.
Yes.
And they
when it was faux chicken.
Yes. That's when they were faux McNuggets. They were always a little cold and they were sort of chicken-y, like somebody passed them over some bouillon, but they didn't really taste like chicken. I mean, that's sort of how I would imagine that we taste.
Yeah.
Plus, you have to make sure that you don't eat any of our like plastic implants, or, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on that maybe the aliens don't really want to eat us.
Well, I think that they would love to have us for lunch, but that would be as a guest. You know? That would be as a come to our table or whatever, you know, they use and sit with us and speak with us and connect with us. And they do that. They just do it in a different way.
Yeah.
They do it in a way. Well, you know, I mean, I was going to, when you brought me on tonight, the first thing I was going to say to you is, so remember last week when we, you know, got so rudely interrupted and cut off when I was mid-sentence? I don't even remember what I was talking about. But what I was talking about triggered something and we got disconnected. And so I wanted to assure you that tonight my phone is fully charged. My phone is fully updated.
Yay.
I am set and ready to go technologically. So if we get cut off, it is them again. I'm telling you that.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because way that they, and it doesn't even just mean extraterrestrials, spirit in the realm that it's in the dimension and the energy realm that it's in is able to finagle with, technology as well. And so there have been times that I've been talking about the farmhouse and particular entities in the farmhouse and said certain words. And there was all kinds. I mean, you talked to George, you asked George some of the sounds that came through the phone and were recorded in the podcast that were not of this world. And I don't know what they were or who they were or why it was happening, but it's we don't always just get cut off. Sometimes there are other intrusions and a kind of interference that not only will I hear or you will hear, but that the audience will hear as well. If that happens, that's what it is. And it's only because they're making their presence known, because we are engaging. We are engaging now. Just by the two of us having this conversation, it raises the vibration. It heightens the energy. It resonates in the same way that throwing a pebble in a pond and watching the concentric circles reach out to the nearest shoreline, no matter how long that takes, it changes the energy. It raises the energy. Just by engaging on the subject itself. And when I came in the house, I went outside just before 10 o'clock. And when I came in the house, I turned and I looked at the TV and I thought, should I just turn it off or turn it down so that I could plop myself in the recliner and have a lovely 2-hour conversation with you? And as I thought that, a flash of white light appeared in front of the dark satin curtains in the front window.
Wow.
And they were in the house with me. They are in the house with me. They go with me wherever I am. I invited them into my home in Florida a couple of years ago. I have no regrets about doing that. They are not intrusive. They will just simply make themselves known to me. Sometimes it'll look like a little tiny black tic-tac flying through the air between the screen, the back of the screen of my computer, and the top of my roll-top desk. And then just, you know, ping, a flash of light, and it's gone. They can make themselves, I don't know what that is. I don't know if it's them shrunken down. I don't know if it's a little thing that they send out to those of us that they are in contact with, just to let us know that they're there. I don't know. All I know is the experience. And the experience is so profound and so life-altering to me that I don't have to have the answers to all the questions. Would I like to have them? Yes. I would, because I realize that by having those answers, it will prompt more questions, and that I will be searching lifelong for the myriad answers that there are to the mysteries of life. But they are life. They are part of existence. They are part of the one. You know, everything is one thing. Everything is energy. Everything is consciousness. If, you know, Rene Descartes wrote his thesis, "I Think, Therefore I Am." And when I was doing my senior thesis in college for my degree in philosophy, I turned it around and said, entitled it, "I Am, Therefore I Think." And if you are part of infinite consciousness, infinite mind, divine mind, if you are part of the one, the soul, the central core source energy in the universe, then you become the way the universe observes itself through your own eyes, through your own existence. And that's my philosophy of life in a sentence. It's the only thing simple about me.
Yeah, I mean, and even that's not so simple, is it? I mean, really, that's, I mean, if that's as simple as you get, that's not very simple. But I think it is simple. I think metaphysics is, you know, whether you're metaphysics because you want to discuss spirits, you want to discuss what the nature of what you think God is, you want to discuss what you think fairies are, you want to discuss what you think off-worlders are. I really think that metaphysics is a lot more cut and dried and a lot more easy to understand than people think.
Yeah. If you lump all of it into one category, existence, this is existence. This is, you know, when people come to understand the awakening that so many write about, lecture about, preach about, the Great Awakening is ongoing. It's underway. This is the paradigm shift. We're living in it right now.
I agree.
That's why we're all here.
Mm-hmm.
we're all here to usher in the new age of enlightenment, a higher consciousness, a higher love. And so, you know, none of us should make the mistake of, you know, this isn't all light and love and woo-woo. This is all of it is being prompted by the rearing of the ugly head of pure, unadulterated evil in the world. It has surfaced in a way that is cleansing, because as it is arriving to the surface, it is being hit with the white hot spotlight of truth. And so as this unfolds and occurs, there is a cleansing which is ongoing, and it's a part of spiritual ascension, a part of the realization of oneness that I have been reading about, learning about, and exploring since I was a teenager. You know, the first books on this subject started coming out about 40, 45 years ago. And as I was searching for answers, having grown up in a very unusual environment that I was predisposed to wanting to know more about as I saw those experiences unfolding. Likewise, I had my first sighting of a fleet of vessels. My first conscious sighting happened at the farmhouse when I was 13 years old, and I had just turned 13. We hadn't even lived at the farm a year yet when this happened. And I didn't tell my mother about it for at least 2 or 3 years. I think I was probably at least 15 years old when I finally told my mother what I saw there. And then we talked about the other things that we saw at the farm too.
We didn't talk about it right away either in that house. Yeah. We didn't talk about it either. And there were things that, like we talked about when you were here last week, Andrea, there were things that I didn't even know until, you know, when my mom did my show, maybe a year before she died. And she just came out and told her Hat Man story. Like, she'd never told me that. I think she thought somehow she had told me that. And I think there was part of it that she'd actually maybe forgotten until we were on the air. And she was just like, oh, and you know, another weird thing that happened was I moved to Poughkeepsie, and that thing followed me the first night. I'm like, okay, well, that's a very important part of the story, Mom.
Yeah. Well, and I told you last week the same thing that happened. I'm playing, you know, an innocuous game of Scrabble with my mother, and before I realize it, she's telling me about an encounter that her mother had with a spaceship, except she didn't know what to call it.
Yeah.
And when my 12-year-old mother asked my grandma Gussie what it was exactly that she saw, my very staid and stoic grandmother got very emotional, and her green eyes just filled with tears, and she smiled from ear to ear, and she verbalized it the only way that she knew how, and was quite convincing when she looked in my mother's eyes and said, I saw Jesus.
Yeah.
Now maybe she did.
Maybe she did. You know, maybe she did. And maybe that explains why the Mormons believe Jesus was here in North America. I mean, maybe, and I've talked about this a lot when I have spiritual discussions, Andrea, maybe what we think of as God and Jesus and angels, and what we think of as off-worlders, and what we think of as interdimensionals, maybe, you know, clearly all them critters play together in the universe, maybe interacting a lot more than we think. Because, I mean, if you read the Bible, right, the story of Ezekiel and the wheels, it's a UFO. It's totally a UFO.
Yeah.
And I think that throughout the history of the Earth, and I only speak about the Earth because I've never lived anywhere but the Earth,
that you know that, of.
Well, in this life.
That you remember.
In this life, in this incarnation, I believe that throughout the history of humanity on the earth, that oftentimes what's an off-worlder and what's an angel has gotten sort of mixed up. And maybe it's the same thing, or maybe sometimes it's an angel and people think it's an off-worlder. Because when I did that channeling session in the Hollywood Hills, and it was supposed to be an off-worlder, I'm not convinced that wasn't an angelic, because that thing, it was like a giant 20-foot thing landed on the roof, and it was so heavy. And it was like it just swooped down, and it was like sitting on the roof. And what this girl was going through, channeling it through her body, and this other girl was spitting out like an ancient language, and I kept getting the ticker tape in my head of what the ancient language, the interpretation of the language, and I'm like, it was a thrill ride. And like I told you, it was one of the few times in my life, post growing up in that house, where I actually was walking to my car and I thought, am I going to get swooped up and abducted at any minute? Am I going to make it to the car? Because the air in the neighborhood, the energy in the neighborhood, and I go to that neighborhood all the time. And I go to that neighborhood all the time and do seances. So this was not a first thing. The energy in that neighborhood was so different. And three of us kind of stumbled out of my friend's house together and we were all kind of like, what in the fuckity fuck just happened? And none of us quite know what to do.
Does that mean that we're allowed to swear on your
air? Yes, you can always swear on my show. I'll get another radio career. It's okay. I'll give up. They can kick me. I'll get another show. No, it's fine. I reserve it for really special places, and that was one of them. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were all kind of stumbling around the Hollywood Hills like, what happened to us?
Yeah. But now let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. Let's extrapolate this out just a little bit, okay, my dear. How many of you were involved in this?
Let me think. There was two that started it. My friend that opened and closed the veil, three. The girl that read the messages, four. The girl that took the being in her body, five. The girl that grounded the whole thing, six. I was seven. And then there were either two or three sort of muggles that were completely scared shitless. So somewhere between 8 and 10.
Had a role to fulfill.
Yeah, except
every one
for
of you had a task.
The visitors that were terrified. So I would say there were seven of us. It was between 8 and 10. I can't remember how many others there were. Oh, yeah. And it was perfectly, I mean, we had put together a circle of light work, and it was definitely designed to be a channeling experience. And the first time we had done it, a friend of mine who was not there the second time, who is a channeler, we sat in her living room, and it was interesting because the camera kept catching this super tall, skinny shadow being as tall as her ceiling standing in the corners. And he was all over those photos. He, she, them, they were all over those photos. And but we never saw the being with our naked eye. And she took the being in herself and translated it. She was a channel, an alien channel. And that was the thing. I just told the story on my Sheena Metal Experience show in the last couple hours that the thing looked at me and said, you. And I said, you collective or me specifically? And it pointed me and it said, you. You're the one that keeps coming back. We keep telling you, you don't have to come back, and you just keep coming back. And I looked at it and I said, and I'll come back again. I'll always come back. And it was like, oh, you. So, which is funny because my mother used to tell me that. She was like, you're one of those that just keeps coming back. She's like, honey, I'm done this life. I'm never coming back here. Unless they make me, I am never coming back here.
Yeah, I feel that way too. I don't want to.
But
I don't have to.
Yeah.
And yet I've been told that I wholeheartedly leapt into this role.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine asking for this thing called life on this planet at this time. I cannot imagine in my conscious state of mind right now why I would have ever deliberately subjected myself to a three-dimensional, five-sensory oppressive realm that sucks the life right out of your body, that drains your lungs of air, that drains your blood from your veins. I mean, that's how my life experience has been, to the extent that given my state of mind now on planet Earth, I don't want to come back, and I don't want to know how the story ends, because we are on the precipice of global disaster, and that is a huge reason why our friends and family have come so far to help shoot light, to bring us out of the dark ages and to bring us into the light. And I don't know if I'll live long enough to see how this resolves. I don't know if I will live long enough for global disclosure. I know that it's certainly well on its way. You know, we have Department of Defense actualization now, and more than they even ratted themselves out as liars. I mean, you know, we are making some headway toward disclosure. But the way I look at it is it's just all too little too late from the lying liars that lie. So I'm not impressed. I am, but I'm not, you know, I'm really not. I really think that we, the contactees and the experiencers, are the point of disclosure, and that it's a worldwide phenomenon, and that as each one of us takes them in and makes contact, has conscious contact, that it raises the vibration of the planet exponentially. And, you know, there are some that say there are 144,000 of us that are scattered all over the globe, that are the teachers, that are the seers, that are the ones who will lead the masses into the new age of enlightenment, to the fifth dimension, transcending the fourth dimension completely, which is considered kind of where ghosts and spirits reside. You know, the thing is, none of us know anything. We don't know jack shit about anything. We don't. And anybody that claims that they do know, that they've got the, you know, the inside scoop on all of this, they are living in bad faith. They are not only lying to themselves, they are lying to you. And if they tell you that they've got the answers, don't walk, run away from them, because all they're trying to do is suck you in to their belief system, or worse and more cynically, suck you in to take advantage of you because they're amoral and they don't really have a belief system. This is their shtick. And I've seen it, and you've seen it. And we know that there are people out there like that. And that is why when people ask me, you know, do you know a good medium or somebody that I could talk to, you know, get a reading from? And, you know, I reference you. Chip Coffee, you know, Tiffany Rice, a few people that I know personally that are really tuned in, turned on, connected in a divine and a supreme way, and are ready to assist humanity and help guide people on their spiritual ascension, because that's what's actually going on, and it's all that's going on. It's all that's really happening. That is the essential nature of reality. And all the rest of it is gobbledygook. But if you can't live in that mindset, because you're also being forced to compartmentalize into a three-dimensional five-sensory realm where you think that everything that is invisible simply does not exist, or that, you know, that flash that you saw in the sky just had to be something other than what you just, you know, felt in your gut that it was, just dismiss it, you know, it'll go away, move on. That mindset is so limiting, is so, it's part of the oppressive energy of the planet. And it drains me of my life force, because I feel, whether it be empathetically or sympathetically, or, you know, my sensitivity level personally is so off the freaking charts that I have to block other people's emotions. I have to block my own knowledge of the pain and the suffering and the abuse and the torture and the neglect and the murder and the rape and the everything that is going on all around this globe right now, this instant, as I sit here and talk to you about my need to get the hell out of here. And yet, I can't.
You sound like my mother, and I got to tell you, she was never more happy to be dead than when she was dead.
Yeah.
I mean, just the jubilation. It's why I have a hard time mourning her, although I do. But it would be, it's a little bit like being resentful of somebody who got to go to Disneyland for a week. You know what I mean? She's so happy that it's hard to be angry at her when she
is
so happy.
I don't want to be dead. I just want to be off the planet.
Yeah, well, she wanted to be done.
And I go off the planet, so I know of what I speak.
Yeah.
You know, I have been off planet, off world, have been to places that are so extraordinarily beautiful. I don't know where they are. I don't know. You know, I don't know. It's not just a dream. It's something else entirely. I can't explain to you exactly what it is, but I have a good friend. We were in a food line at a paranormal conference about extraterrestrials. And she turned to me and she said, "Have you ever been off planet?" I said, "Yeah, it's blue. And it's just layers and layers and layers of blue, every shade of blue, and then 100 shades of blue I didn't know if you existed." And I said to her, I turned to her and I got all wide-eyed and I said, "And it's got," and she said to me, "2 moons." And I'm like, "Oh my God, that's how I know you." Mm-hmm. And she's one of the preeminent paranormal researchers and ufologists in the world. She's a forensic scientist, former military.
Yeah. I think I'm just assigned to hear, and that's okay.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Sorry, honey.
I got to tell you, so this is what it's like to be me. It's a little different than what it's like to be you, which is good, right? Because everybody has to be everybody. I am happiest when I am sitting in the middle of the everything here and I can feel all of the energies and all of the everything here kind of swirling around me and moving through me. And then I know that that's exactly where I belong, and it sort of lifts me up.
Well, I'm really happy for you.
That's true. I mean, look, there are times where I feel like I've been punched in the crotch. Don't get me wrong. I've had a year like that. But mostly it's because of people. It's not because of people in general. It's because of specific people. It doesn't change that feeling like I become, and I'm an introvert. I'm an extroverted introvert. Like I'm the happiest when I'm by myself, but when I'm by myself with all of the energy running through me and I feel like it's the hum of this place that lifts me up. I'm definitely supposed to be here and right in the middle of one of the biggest cities in the world, right? Where I can feel, you know, tens of millions of energies around me all the time.
Oh, and it kills me when I'm in your town, honey. Oh my God, LA just levels me. If I only spend 3 or 4 days, by the time I get home, I have to sleep for a week.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, there's a vibration
about
that city.
Yes.
And I think every major metropolis
has
its own vibration.
But they're all different. But this one is
based on the accumulated souls.
Oh, the LA vibe.
It has a pulse.
Mystical and magical and intense and creative and demanding and captivating and seductive. And it's why people come here and never go home. It's why people come here and kill themselves. It's why there's so many damn coyotes here. It just keeps drawing and drawing and drawing you to this spot. And I am absolutely in love with it.
Well, it has its own law of attraction. Las Vegas has its own law of attraction.
They're very different.
And does tend to attract a seedy element as well, as well as families going and enjoying the resorts and, you know, all of that. But it has its own kind
element.
Of underlying vibration in Las Vegas that I have felt.
Sure.
That I find very uncomfortable. I mean, when you are handed a key to your room at the Bellagio, this I know for a fact. I was standing there. I was handed a key and I was also handed the card for a call girl.
Nice. Did you get one?
No. I looked at the woman and I said, "And this would be for what?"
Honey, for a little something.
And, You know, it's like, whoa, wait a minute, you know, wait a minute.
You see, I don't.
I'm not sophisticated like that. Okay. I'm just not.
And that's the difference in being you and being
prudish
me.
I'm prudish in a way.
Right.
Not really. And yet, you know, I'm kind of old fashioned. I think
romance is,
you know, hand holding and first kiss. And
I am too.
You know, that there's a logical progression.
Right.
You fall in love, you know.
Yes.
To be up against a hot body is not my idea.
They'd have to send you an 1800s call girl.
It's a form of exercise, and it shouldn't be.
I agree. I'm different because I certainly have never done that. I say certainly as if people assume, and people maybe don't assume that. I've never been with any kind of prostitute of any gender or no gender at all. I've been to sex clubs, but have not participated. I have tons of friends who are strippers. I've been to a million strip clubs in my life, but only participated if it was like for show, for fun. Like I did, I hosted a bikini contest for years when I was on the Howard Stern station here, and I would let them, the girls do lap dances for show, but I've never like gone to get a lap dance. But I think it's all fantastically funny because it's part of the human zoo. And I find the human zoo to be just hysterical. I don't often participate in it because for me, because of how empathic I am, for me to get involved with somebody, I have to like really be into it. It has to really be my thing. And I'm one of those weirdos who's like, you know, everybody laughs because I've never had a drink and I've never tried a drug and I've never smoked pot and I've never had a cup of coffee. I've also never had a three-way. I've never slept with anybody I wasn't in love with. Like I'm just very selective what I put in my body, organic or non-organic, because I don't want to have to beat myself up because I did a dumb thing and now I can't get past it. But I think it's fantastic that it goes on, and I love to watch. I mean, I went to a sex club once and there was a girl on a wheel. And she was loving being on that. And she was just spinning around like Wheel of Fortune. And people were just staring at this naked girl spinning around. And I thought, that is the bizarrest thing. But maybe that's my strange, whatever alien people I come from, that I think humans are a hoot. I oftentimes don't feel like I am one, but I think they're fantastically funny until they make you want to cry for 6 days. Then they're not funny anymore.
Yeah. Then it's not so funny anymore.
But, you know, my best friend who struggles a lot with depression and anxiety and, you know, way worse depression than I do, and probably worse anxiety than I do, if that's possible. I sometimes just call her and I'm like, I have stories. And I literally just tell her all the crazy ass stuff that I have encountered with human beings for the week just to make her laugh, because it's like weird stuff just finds me. Now, sometimes it's negative stuff that makes you want to cry for 6 days. But the way you feel about the amount of energy and the kind of energy that come off of humans is very similar to how my mom felt. And it's why she spent a lot of time alone. You spend a lot more time, as my mom would call it, out amongst them than she did, because she just couldn't handle the amount of weirdness that came off of people. I mean, it wasn't a resentful thing. It was just like, look, if I have to go to the mall today, I'm going to cry. So she would just, you know, stay in and spend her time in books and watching musicals and, you know, helping out my friends psychically on the down low and studying psychology. But mostly she read a lot of mysteries, a lot of romance novels, and watched a lot of musicals. She escaped a lot. She didn't like
things. I don't really have that luxury.
Yeah.
Much as I would consider it a luxury.
Yeah.
It is my time. My time is so precious to me.
Good for you.
Because I am ever... the awareness that it can be over in a second is omnipresent with me. And so I have a deep appreciation for my life. And yet I will, you know, openly and honestly admit that there have been times that I really, really didn't want to be here anymore.
I'm so sorry, sweetheart.
Never a plan. with always the knowledge that it would kill my mother, first of all.
Right.
And she just turned 80 years old. You know, we're hanging in there. And I want every single minute in this realm with her that I can possibly have. And I am so grateful that she is still with me. And, you know, so she's my hero. She's my world, really. She's my heart. She's my soul. She's my world. And so spending time with her now, at coming off the road, being done for the year, and making a beeline for Georgia to be with my mother has been the very, very best thing that I could have done for myself. You know, and I was the inadvertent benefactor of my own decision to get here as soon as possible after I finished my last event up in Michigan. It was imperative for me. But, you know, I have to say, when I have made lifelong friendships, when I don't think about it as going out into the world when I'm doing these events, because, again, the law of attraction applies across the board in every way. It's it is an energy, and these particular paranormal conferences that I attend year in and year out, more than I could ever count, attract certain people. And what they attract is what in the Buttercup Brigade, they have dubbed the tribe. And they're my tribe, and I am their tribal, you know, what some call me, their leader. I don't perceive myself as that. I perceive myself as one of them. But I just happened to write some books, and there was a movie, and yada yada, you know, and so I get that kind of attention and notoriety. But I don't think of it as I'm just there. I'm their touchstone. I am their touchstone. I am their validation that what they experienced, what they've been through in their lives, is real. And so there is a connection. When I meet someone who is connected off world, who is connected to the galactic family, I can spot them at 100 yards in a crowd. I know who is who. And so, you know, my father, who has to live out in the real world and does business and makes, you know, television commercials for people and stuff like that, he hates it. He absolutely hates it. He's like, when can I go on another trip with you? Because, you know, those are the people. It's those people that, you know, I mean, the wall of love. When I took my sisters, Dad and I go every year to Sault Ste. Marie in August for, I went the first few years by myself, and then I started, it was just too much, and I started bringing him. And last year, this past August, my three living sisters came. And my fourth deceased sister, she came as well. And my mother was home with our extended family here for her 80th birthday, and her whole immediate family was up in Sault Ste. Marie. And we, you know, I phoned her up and put her on a microphone and let the audience ask questions, and they all sang happy birthday to her, and it was a hoot, it was a riot, but it was my people. And, you know, I know that that sounds very tribal, and I'm going to put that in quotation marks for a reason. Because one of the problems that humanity has right now is going tribal, you know, whether it's politically or whether it's in terms of religious belief or doctrine, or whether it is, you know, in any number of ways, we separate, we isolate, we clump, we create cliques, we create groups, we create, you know, based on our interests. You can be on 100 different Facebook groups, from anything from swapping old clothing to, you know, sharing film of, you know, extraterrestrials that's kind of been released behind the scenes. And, you know, I mean, there are closed groups of people that share certain information that don't put it out to the whole rest of the world. And I maybe it's because we live in such a social media environment now that we went from being just social creatures to now having the technology to be uber social creatures. And so we feel the need to clump because we can't get along with everybody. Well, the truth of the matter is that you can love everybody. It's just that there are some people that you need to, you know, by necessity for your own health and well-being and peace of mind, love from a safe distance. You know, I have people in my life that I adore. I just adore. But I have to keep them at arm's length because otherwise it will degrade. And I don't want that to happen. So I just love them from a distance. And there are some people that have been in my life that are no longer in my life. And it doesn't mean that I don't still love them. I do. But I love them enough to let them go. Because what I represented to them was not healthy. What they represented to me was not healthy based on their own particular persuasion. And that's perfectly okay. It doesn't mean that we have to feel hatred for somebody that we are in juxtaposition with.
Not at all. No, not at all. You know, I have a friend that says there's no such thing as good or bad people, which we'll talk about in a second. There's only people that are good or bad for you. And I like the ideology of that. I also honestly believe there are bad people. But I do like that idea that there are just people that just aren't your people. And I do think that takes care of a lot of situations. Above and beyond that, I believe there are people that just are bad people. But that's a whole nother topic. I mean, and I like that you actually believe in that. Because, you know, last week's topic was, do you believe in evil? And a lot of people don't. A lot of people just think, nope, everything's good. La, 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 la. The only bad stuff is the stuff we create. And I always say, well, it must be nice to live in Candyland, but that's not where I live.
Yeah, that's Candyland. That is not the reality of our existence. It's just not. You know, just because I've, you know, often used the metaphor about the moon, the full moon. You know, we all know that the moon is our little sphere that's hanging pretty close by and has its own rotation, and its light changes over the course of the month. But we do not question its existence on the night of the new moon when we cannot see it.
Right. Yep.
We still know that it's there. It's there. We just can't see it.
Yes.
Good and evil are entirely intangible, and yet we see tangible evidence of both in every moment of every day. I mean, if you have any question in your mind as to whether or not evil exists, turn on the news. You know, I mean, there it is in your face, evil. Why we are preoccupied with it and why we are preoccupied with fear is something that I have yet to rationalize or to reconcile.
Yes.
I don't understand why people are attracted to being fearful. Why people like going to scary movies, why people like to be, you know, to have that shot of adrenaline. I don't get that. It is not a comfortable state of being for me. And in fact, in spite of the fact that I've had, oh God, I can't even put a number, countless sightings over the course of my life, I have never once, not once, been fearful of what I saw in the sky or what I saw traveling through my bedroom or what I saw at the bottom of my bed or what I saw in my office or, you know, in my home. Apparitions of, you know, full body apparitions of space vessels flying in my house, the size of a Tic Tac, literally the size of a Tic Tac, that little. That's real. It's real. And my sensory perceptions are at their height. I have, because of an encounter that I had that I wrote about in my new book, A Wonder to Behold, I had an encounter. I had a healing take place in May, I believe May. Yes, May 24th, 2017. And since then, I have supersonic hearing. I mean, I have like ridiculous hearing. I have, my sight has been enhanced. All my senses have been enhanced, but most profoundly, most predominantly, my sixth sense has opened me up. It opened me up in new and inexplicable ways. I've had experiences that involve spontaneous regenerative memory of something that happened to me almost 50 years ago. And yet, in the moment that I needed to have that recollection, it was given back to me. Now, what kind of access is there that can pull what is to me an ancient memory from my memory bank and then flash it back into my mind to send me a message to make a point that inevitably ended up as an entire chapter in my new book? All of that happened for a reason. All of it did. It was the incident that I've probably told you about before. It happened a few years ago, and I was abruptly disturbed. I had not gone to sleep yet. It was quite late. I'd been working on the screenplay to my movies, and I was kind of shoved while I was in my bed, pushed. And, you know, kind of sloughed him off and said, leave me alone. I'm going to sleep. I'm tired. Not tonight. And then I got pushed again and I got up and it was winter and I threw my robe on and my slippers and I went out into the middle of my quite large driveway and just looked up into the sky and said, what? I was so perturbed. And I'm sorry about that. And they know that I'm sorry about that. I was just exhausted and not in a really good mood, and I've already apologized.
Well, you have a right to have a human life too, sweetheart.
Well, I know, but still, you know, this is a big deal. It's a really big deal that I have this with them, and I have to be cognizant of it at all times and put my, you know, when my vessel is weary, too bad, get up. Go do what you're told. You know, I follow instructions well. My, you know, and I was given a directive and was failing to follow it. And there was a reason for it. So I got up and I went outside, copped an attitude, said what I said. And I, like a blinding flash of light in my forehead. It was, I mean, it forced me to close my eyes. It was so bright. And yet it was not outside of me. It was inside of me. And I was 12 years old. I was standing with my mother and my sisters in a chicken coop at a chicken farm, not far from our new farm. We had just moved to Harrisville, Rhode Island, to the farmhouse. And it was like a few months after we moved there. We went to buy fresh eggs at a local chicken farm in Connecticut, which was just across the border. And the farmer's wife took us, my mother and the children, out so that we could see some of the baby chicks that were being born. They were in eggs and incubators. And I saw a little tiny beak pecking through. And as I'm looking at this beak, I'm getting more and more excited because I can see that there's a little baby inside there and I want to hold the baby. So I reach over, and just as I'm about to plunge my thumb into the egg that I have my hand on, my mother retracts my hand and tells me very gently that if I break that egg, that the baby will die. Well, of course, I was absolutely mortified. Why? because I was a victim of my own ignorance. I did not understand the nature of the chicken and the egg. I did not understand that I could not help that baby be born, that the baby had to be born on its own, because as my mother tried to explain to me at the time, and I learned my lesson well, so I forgot about it. What she was telling me was that the amount of energy that it takes for that chick to peck its way out of its egg, out of its own birth enclosure, is what builds its strength and is equivalent to the amount of energy that will be required for it to live outside the egg. And if I interrupt that process, then I will cause its death, not enhance its life. Well, how important a message is that? It was important enough that I came back into the house and went into my office, aka the man cave, and opened up my computer, and I wrote a treatise called The Chicken and the Egg, which I included in my volume, my new volume.
Wow.
Because it is a very, very important life lesson, and it pertains specifically to the interaction which occurs between extraterrestrials, aka the galactic family, and us. They are observing us. They cannot crack our own egg of consciousness. They cannot do it for us. They are not here to save us. They are here to observe us, save ourselves, and to send us as much positive energy and help us raise the vibration of this planet to the extent that our own awareness of the realization of oneness occurs to us, and we start to care about our fellow human beings in a more profound, higher love way.
Yeah.
And we start to care about the planet that we live on, being that we are literally the only creature on this planet that fouls its own nest deliberately.
Yeah, I mean, yes. And that was sort of what happened when I was in this supposedly off-world, possibly angelic channeling session. This thing, and it was so big, and it was so old, and it was so powerful. And it was just kind of like, why? Why are you doing this? Don't make us come in and intervene. Why? Why can't we stop with the ego and the hate and the negativity and the selfishness? And you are ruining our planet, and you're ruining your planet, and you are ruining each other. And this has got to stop. And I said to everybody afterwards, I'm like, man, we're gonna get smote. Because I mean, you know, like if you look in the Bible, and I'm not like a super Bible girl, but you know, I'm as much about the Bible as I am about any other doctrine. I think all of them together, somewhere in there lies the truth.
Yeah.
You know, when there was great times of misbehavior, the angels kind of came in and they just smote that stuff. And the story of Sodom and Gomorrah, which people kind of have backwards, it wasn't that like, oh, it was free love and people were gay there. It wasn't about that. It was that it had become a society based on selfishness and abusing other people to get what you wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And it was that lack of humanity that the universe sent the angels in to take it out. It was not, oh, somebody was gay and somebody wanted to have a three-way. I think it's very easy for man to dictate what the Bible says, and it suddenly becomes about, oh, see what happens? If you have a free life and you think for yourself and you read the books you're not supposed to and you're sexually free, look what'll happen to you. The angels will come and burn you up. It's not about that. Sodom and Gomorrah had become just a really nasty, self-focused, ugly, hateful place where there was no humanity. And, you know, then it just went away. So, you know, and that was the first thing I thought when that being, because it wasn't mad and it wasn't lecturing. It was just sort of like, oh, God, please don't make us. Don't make us come and have to take care of this. And I was all freaked out at the table. Yeah. I'm like, we're all going to get smote if we don't behave. And, you know, everybody kind of looks at me like, yeah. And I feel like the Lorax, right, from Dr. Seuss's Lorax. Yeah. Everyone's, yeah, little thing. Just go away. Yeah. But you know,
well,
That's what it is for me.
They don't want to intervene.
In a session like that. For me, it's not about having the experience or wasn't it scary or, oh my God, the girl was twisting around and the being was inside of her and it was very terrifying. For me, it's about, are we listening, actually listening to what this being is saying, which is, we are so saddened by the way that you have squandered the gifts that you've been given. And there is a limited amount of time before we have to do something to fix this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and that was...
Well, I hope that that's true. I do. I welcome intervention. I truly do, in whatever form it takes. But from everything that I have been told, they're not here to intervene on our behalf. And I so hope I misconstrued that. I so hope that, you know, I feel like just their presence is intervention. Just their presence.
Sure.
Just that some of us can see them, that they make their presence known to certain individuals, or sometimes large groups of individuals. I feel that because of the connection that I have, I invite them, you know, in opposition to one of the great minds of the last century and this, Stephen Hawking. One of the last things that he wrote is about extraterrestrials prior to his death. And the message from Stephen Hawking was, yes, they're here, but do not talk to them. Do not. You don't know what their intentions are. Well,
yeah.
I beg to differ. I do know what their intentions are. I have lived for 61 years, and from the age of 13 to this present moment, I have never had a negative altercation. I have never received a negative message from them. I have felt their tenderness toward us. I have felt their sadness and their grief about the loss, needless loss of life on this planet. I have struggled with the complexities of their emotional makeup. I don't know who exactly I am communicating with at any given time.
Sure. And I'm sure it varies.
But I do know that there are 57 races that's been documented, recorded, 57 different races that have visited or are currently visiting or residing on this planet or in this planet or beneath the ocean. They are everywhere. They are omnipresent like God. They might be God. There may very well be an extraterrestrial race that is powerful beyond our imagination, that possesses technology beyond our comprehension, that perceive us to be their offspring, perceive themselves to be the overseers, the guides, the guardian angels. You know, all of it is potentially conceivable. And in some ways, it's the only way that, you know, I can explain otherwise for myself, the inexplicable, what is deemed to be a miracle, the implantation of Mary, the Virgin, you know, the resurrection, you know, especially talking about that at this time of year. You know, science has already proved that, you know, Jesus Christ wasn't born on December 25th. More than likely, he was born in the spring.
Yeah,
that
April.
There was nothing in the sky at the time astronomically that would have shed the kind of light that would have drawn or led three wise men and the kings to the side of the baby Jesus.
Oh, absolutely.
The Savior.
Absolutely.
You know, I
yeah.
mean, if you read that story literally in whichever version of the Bible you choose to read, there are 17 different versions of the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
But that story remains pretty consistent throughout all the different versions.
Well, December.
And I know this because I had to study all of this to get a degree in philosophy. You know, so this is this information is old information for me. And yet from the time that I was first studying the world religions as a teenager in preparation for my college curriculum and studying metaphysics when I was a youngster, it was in because I was searching for answers. I was searching for clues. Well, as I have matured and as I have observed all the different encounters that I've had over the course of my lifetime, that's the only thing that makes any sense to me. Literally the only thing. That it's not a miracle, that magic and miracles are science we don't understand yet.
Absolutely. And I believe that, you know, that obviously the December Jesus thing, I mean, December 21st is Yule, right? So they just basically took Christmas and they plugged it into the middle of a pagan holiday to try to make the pagans happy.
Exactly.
So that everybody who had been converted at life at knife point wouldn't feel resentful. I mean, that's, you know, that's really what, I mean, so many things about Christmas are, they stole from the Irish. I mean, I got to say it as an Irishman, the tree, the Santa Claus, the Yule log. I mean, come on, people. You stole from the Irish again.
And from the German too. They stole from the
German. Right. And the elves, right. All that stuff. Yeah. So yes, they stole from the Germans too. They stole from everybody. They stole from all the pagan religions and they made this thing. But yeah, the funny thing is that science says, right, that Jesus was probably born on April 15th. Which is tax day now, which I think would just be so awful for him. Like, he hated taxes. But isn't that interesting? What an irony that is, that his actual birthday may have been tax day. So strange. But yeah, I mean, I think for people who are watching and or listening and thinking, well, but how could there be Jesus and also be aliens, or how could there be God and also be, you know, trolls? Or the thing is, there's more things in heaven and earth, right? There's plenty
because
of room in
the
universe.
The way that it can
everything.
Be that way is if everything is one thing.
Yeah.
If everything is a conversion of energy.
It's all part of the universe.
If everything is existence and consciousness.
Right, including us. It's all part of the universe. We're all just creatures of the universe, and every creature of the universe can exist. I can't think of really anything. I try to think, and I always ask folks on my show, I asked Dave Schrader this, I think, last week, like, what do you not believe in? I don't think there's anything that I don't believe in. I'm trying to think if there's anything that I've heard that I just think is hooey, but I can't think of anything that I don't hear and then think, well, that's a possibility. I don't know. Is there anything you don't believe in, Andrea?
I don't believe in most stuff. I know what I know. It's not a matter of belief for me.
All right.
If you know, and I believe in love. I believe in the inherent power of love. I believe that love conquers fear. That fear is the root cause of hatred, that it is a bona fide example of the existence of good and evil. I believe that there are evil forces at play, that we live in a duality, if not in this realm exclusively, then throughout the universe. I don't know if it exists throughout the universe, but I do believe that the potential for its existence throughout the universe does exist. And if that makes any sense at all, I'm not talking in circles. What I'm trying to do is encompass the whole, the big picture. I have been messaged about wars happening on other planets and the outcome. I know of a race that doesn't even live on their own planet anymore. Their number holds steady at about 600,000. That was, by our count, our earthly count, was once a race of many millions. And because of a war that was something akin to nuclear war on this planet, they had to abandon ship and go find another planet to live on, and were technologically advanced enough to be able to do it, to save what remained of their race. And they found out the hard way. that there are no winners in war. We don't learn anything. We learn nothing. This world, as long as human existence has been recorded, has been at war. Humans have been at war with each other for some reason in some region of this planet since time immemorial. And we don't learn anything. We don't ever seem to learn in race consciousness that we are all our brother and our sister's keeper, that we are all here to love each other well and to help each other, that there are no borderies, that there are no boundaries, that borders and boundaries, and that we are one race of people, regardless of the slant of our eyes or the color of our skin. We all cry tears. We all bleed red. We all want what is best for our offspring. We all want them to have a better life than we did. And that is the nature of the human condition. Mm. And yet, in order to propagate it, we claim land and we claim superiority with our religious beliefs. And we dispose of anyone that is not in concurrence with our belief system. So I don't claim to believe anything, because even though having faith seems to be the engine that drives us forward, it can also be our greatest liability. And so I espouse the words of John Lennon: imagine a world where everyone lives in peace, where everyone loves each other, where the crops are grown for the greater good, for the whole, what benefits the most, that it's not all about greed and avarice, that it is not all about how much you can accrue in this limited time span that you have in this thing called life, but how much good you can do for your fellow human being while you reside on this planet. And that will require a leap in consciousness, and that will require a crisis of consciousness for the 1% of the people on this planet that control all of us, because they have all the power and all the money, which is in itself an illusion.
True. Well said. And I'm sorry, aliens be like, don't make me come back there.
Yeah, don't make me
or
come
angels,
down there.
Whatever that being was, it wasn't like threatening. It was just like, oh God, don't make us come back there. Come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
We don't want it. We don't want it.
You were conjuring. That's what you were doing. You were conjuring. What you were doing was opening a portal for that particular entity, that manifestation to occur.
Yep.
So that all of you had a realization of it simultaneously, including the fear-based carbon units hovering in the corner.
They served
a purpose as well, to remind you that most human beings are fear-based carbon units. That's
what we are. The weirdest
thing.
And we
have to find a way to overcome that fear.
Yep.
And in my experience, the only way to do that is to embrace it, to love it, and to put it in its place. It has a place. Fear should be a tool. Fear should be that tap on the shoulder that reminds you that that's not a good idea, that you've got a gut feeling about this guy. Don't get in that car. Don't go down that alley. Don't do this and don't do that, and go home and go to bed. You know, that's the purpose that it serves. And it serves it best when we are coming into puberty and into our early youth, when we are most focused on finding a mate and making some offspring. You know, that's when to be most careful. That's when we are most vulnerable, particularly females. So if we can make that leap and teach our children at an early enough age that they are at the helm, that they are steering their own ship, that they are living into their own destiny, that the decisions that they make are guided by the tools of their own common sense, and that part of that tool chest that they are in possession of has this one tool in it called fear. And when you feel it, you should listen to it, and you should avoid what you are fearful of. That's the role that it rightfully serves. When we give it, when we relinquish our personal power to it, when it rules us instead of us ruling it, then that's when the damage is done. Because that's when we, in this limited time period that we have on this planet called Earth, during this thing called life, in that limited period, lapses in judgments have consequences. And so if you look at your life that way and you can avoid pitfalls because you've learned from the experience of others rather than having to experience it yourself to learn the difficult lessons. When we make that leap in consciousness, when parents start teaching their children to control their emotions and how to, you know, to get into their happy place and yet to also remain cognizant of the world around them and the inherent dangers that exist in that world without scaring them to death, I guess is really what I'm trying to say. When we find that place where it's okay to love everybody, but you just can't love everybody up close. When we teach our children that, they will be the ones that lead us into the new period of enlightenment that we are on the verge of experiencing. You know, I think of a specific case in point. I think of Greta Thunberg, who has stood up, a child who is just brilliant and yet so troubled with the symptoms around Asperger's syndrome and so angry about the world being left to her generation, that she found the courage deep inside of herself to stand up in front of the entire world and hold them accountable, hold the power mongers accountable for the condition that we are in, the gas and the oil industry, the pharmaceutical industry, the medical industry, the industries of the world that have created this mess and that we've all bought into as we, you know, go out and buy another pack of plastic straws and then promise ourselves that we'll cut them into little pieces when they go into the trash. How about don't buy the straws? How about drink out of the cup?
Yeah.
And then wash it in the dishwasher, you know, or by hand, whatever loot uses less water. You know, each one of us can eliminate some portion of our own carbon footprint individually on this planet. Each one of us can contribute to the greater good. But the best way for us to overcome fear is to embrace it and thank it for every single time that it ever saved us from ourselves, from making a terrible decision that could have had significant consequences. Every time that it ever stepped in and functioned on our own behalf, thank it for that. And then watch it dissipate into the ether because it will no longer have any power over you and you can live your life fully and openly and you don't have to let fear call the shots anymore. How many people walk around living a half life because they're so afraid to make that move, to, you know, call that person, to go on that date, to, you know, take another job because it's in a different city and it requires relocation. And oh my God, it could be a disaster. Oh my God, it could be the best thing that ever happened to you.
Yeah.
Don't let fear become an impediment to your own growth.
Yes.
To your own spiritual evolution.
I agree. And live in the now. We spend so much time fearing the future and dreading the past.
Yeah.
And obsessing about the past, that we don't spend any time in the now. Be in the isness. And I talk about this all the time at my spiritual services. Be in service. I mean, get up every day and say, universe, what can I do to serve you today? And let spirit speak to you and tell you how you can be in service. Because there is service for all of us every day. And the more you serve, the more you will be bestowed upon the beauty of life, the more goodies you will get. If you're just somebody who likes to get stuff, the best way to get stuff is to give stuff. The best way to get to be happy, the best way to get all of the goodies that life has to offer is to be in service. And people are always like, why are you so happy? Well, I'm so happy because I'm always in service. I'm always helping people. I'm always going to another place where I can help people. You know, I live my life in the nonprofit world, the spiritual world, the radio world, the ministry world. Everything I do is give back. And so I'm so happy because I'm making other people happy all the time. You know, that's how you get happy. Share a little bit of your love with other people. Share some of your light with other people. And watch how fast it takes all your gloominess away, you know? You're not going to get healed if you don't get out there and get healed.
I don't want to give you the wrong impression or give anybody the wrong impression.
You speak your truth, baby.
But I'm not happy. I am happy. And in fact, I even wrote in my trilogy that I'm a special kind of happy because I even know how to be happy when I'm miserable. And my mother taught me that. My mother is happy even when she's miserable, even if she's in terrible physical pain or psychological pain, you know, the pain of the loss of my sister April. She found a way to be happy about April's death. She found a way to celebrate April's death. And that was the relief that she felt that her baby daughter was now out of pain, out of the physical pain that she endured in this lifetime. You know, so it's both, you know, just like the title of my trilogy, House of Darkness, House of Light.
Absolutely.
My mother titled the book. And when I looked at her, you know, with my searching eyes, wanting to know the reason why those words came to her lips spontaneously, her answer was because it was both. And that's what life is. You know, I have lived a charmed life compared to countless billions of people that have come and gone off of this planet, that have dug for grubs for nourishment, that have seen horrific things in their lifetime that I have been spared. You know, I'm not complaining that I want out of here because it's so hard for me. I live a charmed life. I have always, all my needs have always been met. I've always been able to make enough money to keep myself afloat, to keep a roof over my head. I've never wanted for a meal. You know, I've not wanted in my life in terms of material, anything in the material world. You know, I could have always had a newer car or yada, yada, but it didn't matter to me. If I had something that ran and got me where I was going, and if I had a place to live, it didn't have to be a mansion. It could just be a decent apartment and I was satisfied. You know, none of the worldly stuff ever really mattered to me. It hurts to be human because of the pain I witness for others, for not just the pain that I have felt in loss and some of the terribly sad or things that have happened to me that have made me angry or that have made me supremely sad. That's all part of my human nature and experiencing all of the emotions of being a human being. But I want out of here because I know there's a better place. And it's not that this planet isn't absolutely beautiful. I live in a time when I can go on the Smithsonian Channel and, you know, see an aerial overview of practically every square inch of the planet. You know, I don't even have to get on a plane or get on a boat. I can see the planet on my television. What a remarkable thing. What an incredible thing that this exists. That the technology exists in my lifetime, how much the technology has changed in just my lifetime, that it boggles my mind. The reason I want out of here is because of what I see human beings doing to each other and to this planet. And we're almost at a point of no return in terms of climate change. And I'm part of me is very hopeful and very optimistic that we'll wake up soon enough to be able to circumvent this disaster. But I look at the history of humanity and I think we're just as dumb as dirt. And that's a terrible insult to dirt. We don't seem to learn anything about, you know, from having the luxury of reviewing our own history. We don't seem to learn anything. We don't improve our lot in life. We unleash weapons of war on each other. We unleash hatred on each other in extremely unhealthy, unbeneficial ways, not just for the human lives that are claimed needlessly, but for the damage that is done to the planet while doing it. And I'm just, you know, I'm down here saying, all right, you know, they have a non-intervention policy regarding us. We have to peck our way out of our own shell. And, you know, maybe conversations like this will increase the awareness of that.
Absolutely.
But there is a part of me, my dear, that begs them to intervene.
To stick their thumb in the
shell. To make their presence known globally, all at once, regardless of the fallout. Because it's the only thing that I can imagine that would make everyone look up at one time and drop their weapons.
Mm-hmm. I get it.
So it's complicated.
It is complicated, sweetheart. It's not anything we're going to fix in one day.
Yeah.
Aliens, take me away.
Take me away. Take me for a ride.
Take
get
Annie
me the
away.
Hell out of here.
I'll stay. I'll stay. Yeah. I'll stay and help the muggles. You are wonderful, my friend. Where can people find you online?
Oh, I'm everywhere. Oh, my God. I'm just everywhere. Just Google my name and come join me on Facebook. Facebook is really cool. I have a fan page called the Buttercup Brigade, where the good deed doers, the rose-colored glasses wearers, and, you know, we just kind of tribe up, you know. That's on my little clan. Mostly women, but some very enlightened men as well.
Beautiful.
And yeah, that's the best.
Boys can be buttercups too.
If you want to talk to me personally, absolutely.
Do it, my friends. And thank you, Andrea, so much for being here. And everybody, remember those words, well, things we talked about tonight, so that you can bring more love and more peace and more kindness and more unity into your world, because that's the ideology behind RaisingTheVibration.org, and I am RaisingTheVibration.com, and I'm honored to have Andrea on our advisory board. If you want to get a hold of me, SheenaMetalSpiritual.com, I am RaisingYourVibration.com, the movement, of course, at RaisingTheVibration.org, and I am RaisingTheVibration.com. I'm everywhere on social media at Sheena Metal. I'm a staff pastor at Founders MCC Church in Hollywood. I'm their New Age pastor, and my monthly interfaith night is at SaturdayNightSpiritual.com. And you can find me everywhere. I teach webinars. I have four right now that are live, and I have wonderfully charged and blessed and cleansed crystals, and I do private sessions. Anything you need, you find me. I'm going to give you my phone number because that's how much I love you. 818-437-0886. And this show, RaisingTheVibrationRadio.com. And of course, we're at LATalkRadio.com. Until I see you next time, my lovelies. Man, seek peace, live in love, lead with kindness, embrace unity, and always, 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 whenever possible, raise your vibration. I'm Sheena Metal, and I appreciate you being here with me. We're here every Monday from 7 to 9 p.m. I love you so much, and I'll see you all next week. Thanks again for your ears and your eyes and your love and your souls tonight.
You're listening to Raising the Vibration with Sheena Metal, only on LA Talk Radio.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.